call the Conference Committee on
Literally three.
House File 2323 to order. Madam Chair, I picked up your voice problem. I'm wondering what was in these because I had a couple and my voice immediately started to go hoarse. So I'm not going to bite again. I see you have a new conferee here today. So we would like to give him an opportunity to introduce himself to everybody in the room. But generally, Representative Seifert, a pinch hitter comes in after the starter is pulled. And I'm just wondering if you were the starter, what were the chain of events that caused you to throw in, I think, three pinch hitters before you actually got into the lineup here?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you, and I appreciate you having me here. I got put on the conference committee under duress, and I would say I'm happy to be here, but I had a wedding in Kansas, and I had to be down for my niece's wedding, which was promised if we didn't have session. And since we didn't have session, I had to keep my word to my wife that I would take the nine-hour drive down and threw in anybody willing to come and do the tax conference committee under the speaker's guidance. So I'm ready to move adoption of whatever you guys have done so far. I heard you have not increased taxes yet. Before it's too late, I want to get a bill that can be signed. We can do the same and similar, federal conformity, all the minor language, and get out of here. And I'll sign the report. We'll get it up tomorrow and get the bill signed. How's that sound?
I'll second that.
No, Cyber, I think maybe we should go through the provisions first before we get too far ahead of ourselves. We haven't gone through the property tax article yet. We want to do that tonight.
Sure.
But welcome.
Thank you.
Appreciate having you here. Members, when we went through the local development article on Friday, North Mankato wasn't here. Representative Morrow did a good job of coming in and pinch hitting for the city, but I thought it would be helpful to have the city here to talk about the North Mankato provision. And also, we were in the same kind of a situation with St. Louis Park about their Elmwood TIF district. So St. Louis Park is also here tonight, so I thought we would give them too an opportunity to express their thoughts, and then we'll send them home, unless, of course, they would like to stay and watch the proceedings into the night. But Terry? The North Mankato TIF provisions are on page 72, bottom of 71, and on page 72. Senator Dern, welcome to the Tax Conference Committee.
Thank you very much. Representative Morrow and I have invited the City Administrator Wendell Sandy and the Mayor Gary Zellner here to answer questions on a TIF request that they have, which is to expand the TIF district in their community and to waive the five-year rule so that they can use TIF to pay off expenditures that were used to prepare this area for development. And unless Representative Morrow has something specific he'd like to add to the things he said already, we could certainly invite the administrator and the mayor up to answer your questions.
I have nothing to add, Senator Bach, other than what I said on Saturday. So I think to expedite things, we'll have the mayor and the city administrator
right.
come up.
I think that would be helpful. The five-year rule, Senator Sharon, we addressed that with a larger statewide provision. But the enlarged district, I think, is probably the issue in front of us that we'd like to hear more about. Welcome to the Tax Committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you. I'm Chairman Bach. My name is Gary Zellner. I'm the mayor of the city of North Mankato.
Wendell Sandy. I'm the city administrator.
And we are here to obviously talk about the expanded TIF district and the unusual circumstances that have caused us to ask for this modification to it. Basically, the site we're talking about is referred to as the old Marigold Dairy site, which we took over in 1990. It was a deserted dairy is exactly what it was, and the site was in very bad repair. The city took it over, demolished the building, filled in a very deep well that was on the site and pulled some tanks out and prepared the site for development. And we had it during the 90s, two different hotel projects that were proposed both of which fell through. And in June of 2001, we finally signed a development agreement with a Hampton Inn developer for a 130-unit hotel and water park. And at that time, that hotel was going to fit on the TIF site as it was originally proposed and set up. And along with it, we needed additional parking. So at that time, the city purchased a number of other acres and removed some homes and relocated the homes into other areas in North Mankato and prepared the site for the parking area. Unfortunately, in September 11th, 2001, we all know what happened. And at that point, within a month, all the funding for the proposed project was pulled. Unfortunately, the city had already issued the TIF bonds. I believe the date was April of 2001. The TIF bonds were issued for the removal of the houses and preparation of land and the site preparation. So at this point, we've got the land there, and the project fell through. I wasn't on the council at the time. I ran for office in 2002 with my main project. Our goal was to get that property developed with a quality development of some type. And this is the keystone area in our city. It comes right in off the bridge. It's the first thing you see in North Mankato. Now it's a big gravel lot. Today we have a project that is ready to go. It's basically financed through private financing. It's about a $12 million project. The problem we have is, as the first building going up on the project is on the original site, and it's not large enough to cover the cost of the additional site preparation that we put into it. That is why we're requesting the expansion of the site to include the additional park, or the additional, is it 5 acres, Wendell, roughly?
Additional about 2 acres.
Additional 2 acres to allow us to recover no new costs. All this money was expended in 2001 or prior. So this is all investment that the city's had on the books from that time on. And what we need now is, if we can get this expansion or getting this approval, we'd be able to recover the money that's been put into the project since 2001 and move this project forward. If you've had any specific questions, Wendell can answer the more in detail on. And this to us is a very, very important project. We need to turn the property over to the developer, and without the expansion of the TIF, it's going to be very difficult for the city to do it, because the acres of where the second and third buildings are going to be built are on the new TIF area, and we wouldn't be able to recover the money that we've spent on it.
And all the money's been spent?
It's all been spent. It was spent on the development of the project for the hotel in 2001, and when that collapsed, everything went away. Unfortunately, that's extraordinary circumstances. If it wasn't for 9/11, if it wasn't for the banks pulling, the hospitality industry fell apart at that point, the hotel just died. And we could have built a number of gas stations on the site or convenience stores, none of which were key to the area. And we needed to get a development of a proportional size. And this is what it is. The new development's 4 stories, first two floors are office buildings or office space, and the top 2 floors are condominiums. The second building is going to be up to 8 stories of condominiums and office space, and the third one is going to be an additional condominiums. So for us, this is a real key development. That's why we're here asking for the change.
So are any of the projects under construction right now?
We expect construction on the first phase building to begin August 1st of this year.
And the other two buildings?
They would follow on upon the completion of the first building and the sale of the space.
So that development agreement is in place?
It is.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Gary, good to see you. I saw you at Mass at Holy Rosary with the collection plate in front of my nose here a few months ago. Appreciate seeing you again.
Successful?
Yes. The mayor of Bemidji is the same way. He's also an usher. Anyway, the but-for test on TIF, what you've got an agreement for August 1st on construction. If this bill doesn't pass, what happens? Does the development go belly up, or what happens on the...
It would not affect the first phase development, but the second phase is where we're looking for the expansion for the second and the third building in this project.
Two.
It would not directly impact the first phase building.
So
here we are. What do you think, Madam Chair? We put it in the bill because we thought North Mankato had a problem on their hands.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do think they have a problem on their hands, but I don't think they should be asking the state to bail them out for it. I respectfully know that the legislators who are concerned about this are trying to do the right thing by their community. But this TIF district is 18 or 19 years old. And so now they want to add a parcel to it. And, you know, someone else can think of a time that the state has ever let anyone add a parcel to an 18, 19-year-old TIF district. So I guess they can't create a new TIF district, which I had originally thought maybe they could do that, but they don't qualify for redevelopment because they don't meet the test for that. So, you know, that tells me that the state probably shouldn't be assisting in this regard. It's unfortunate, but it appears to me that this city, like many cities, due to September 11th and other things that went on, have put money out for things, they've incurred the costs, and they've lost the costs. So they're asking the state to come and find them a way for them to recoup their costs. And we generally haven't done that. I mean, if we started doing it here, then we've got to start thinking about doing it everywhere. So, I mean, I recall when in the 2001 tax reform, in fact, due to the compression of rates, there was a pool set up for TIF districts. And I was on the conference committee then, and I pushed that to say there might be some folks that are going to get pinched here. And then as the 2003 deficit rolled around, that pool was used for the deficit. So TIF districts all over the state were left in this sort of same situation. The state did not come to their assistance. So, you know, it's nothing against North Mankato. It's hard for me to understand when we're 18, 19 years in why we would let somebody add a parcel now. And I understand that the city's out these costs, but they're asking the state to really assist them and, you know, in a way that we haven't assisted anyone else.
Not today, is that what you're saying?
I'm not there today, no. But I do know that the legislators representing this area care deeply about it, and I know it's hard to hear, but, I mean, if this one, then why not everybody?
This is the one we have a bill on, Madam Chair.
Well, but, you know, there's been a bunch of bills on these over the years, and we haven't done them. So, I don't know what's so compelling about this one that's different than so many that are in the same sort of situation. We haven't let them add parcels just because they can't recoup all their costs when they lost a developer. Now, I think the general law changes we were talking about earlier, both sides here, were, you know, we were talking about TIF districts after 2003, I think was the date we picked. And we were talking about ones that due to the current recession, you know, now you're back in 1990. So, I don't know, that one gets a little harder for me. I know I'm the bad guy here. I accept that. But honestly, I mean, I can't think of a time that we've done this on either side of the aisle. And maybe someone else can. I mean, I'm open to hearing when that might have been, but I'm not aware of it.
Chairman Bach or Chairman Lachinsky, the question I have is you bring up the issue about the state helping us. This is a local issue with both all three areas of government, the county, the school board, and the city of North Mankato all agreeing to this. It's really tax neutral for the state as it's being set up. This is an issue, local issue. All we're asking is for the permission, and all of the local governments have said, yes, do this because we need this development. So that's what we're asking for. We're not asking for the state to do anything differently other than allow us the opportunity to recover something that we would have had in place if 9/11 hadn't occurred. And that's exactly why we're here. This building would have been up and going, would have been a water park there, it would have been paid for. If there was a problem, we should have expanded it back at that time, but we didn't need it because the building was going to fit onto that site. and it would have paid for all the costs we incurred for the removal of the homes and the preparation of the land.
Mr. Chair.
Chesky.
Well, maybe I should clarify. Yes, there's no state cost, except for, you know, negligible amounts that if you start to do them statewide, they do add up, because when things are off the tax rolls for TIF, they create different impacts on the amount of LGA that's needed in across the state, the amount of property tax refunds the state has to pay due to increased property taxes. But the specific dollar flow of this bill from the state's perspective is zero. That's true, and that's true with every tax increment finance district and every bill we hear. But, you know, all the cities and the counties and the school districts are political creatures of the state, and we set the policy for them. And, you know, we could just eliminate TIF in the state completely and not allow it. We could let it be broadly used in this way for everybody anytime they want it. And it is the tax committee's job to make a determination about if we're going to have TIF, how are we going to use it. And I said before in a previous committee, conference committee this year, that, you know, TIF is legal in the state of Minnesota. There are 2,100 TIF districts, and the only time you ever have to come to the legislature is when you'd like to break the rules. So there's all kinds of TIF that we allow for in current law that we grant that right to cities to use TIF, and they don't need to come here. That's only when they want an exception, and this is an exception, and it's an exception that I honestly can't think of being granted ever before. So while it may, you know, there may be an agreement with this county that they don't mind chipping in on these extra taxes for that amount of time, I guess, you know, I think, Mr. Chair, that if folks locally are all comfortable with picking up the costs, then they should just raise it on the property tax in a transparent way straight up. When it's in TIF, no one knows it's there and people can't see it. And it shifts property tax increases onto the residents.
Well, Madam Chair, if the without the TIF, if the building doesn't get built, is the building going to get built? Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Chair, the first phase building, we believe, will move forward in any event. It's the second and third phase, you know, where we have the issue.
Mr. Chair, they can raise property taxes on their residents to pay for it. They just have to do it in a way everyone can see. This way, no one can see. I mean, city councils and county commissions can do that right now.
But what's different about that?
Well, then they have some accountability. You're not getting the discount from the county. I mean, all city councils, I was on one, you know, we all love TIF because you can shift a big chunk of the burden onto the county. So you get a city project at a reduced price, it's getting a big discount because the county's chipping in a bigger percentage of the cost than the city is. So you're leveraging a tax base that you didn't run for election in.
I understand that. But the city can't raise their property tax levy enough on their own. It's the issue.
Do we know that? Or they just don't want to?
Madam Chair, right now we're under levy limits, and we're probably going to stay under them. So I don't know how they could do that.
Well, maybe they could tell us where they're at on, you know, how close they are to levy limits. But, you know, we've done the Minneapolis and St. Paul things in the South St. Paul where we let them do a city-only TIF. I mean, they maybe could consider that, where they're not leveraging the school and the county to pay for this situation. I mean, you're right, we're in extraordinary times, but it would seem to me that private development would not rise to the extraordinary needs that everybody's competing amongst right now.
Mr.
Senator Sharon.
I would just like to speak to the issue of, I was on a city council as well for 16 years. I know that that the issue is not one of trying to hide what is being done. The TIF's reasonable purpose is to take a piece of property that, but for this kind of investment, it would not be developed. And then the problem with that is for all of those local units of government that you do not capture the potential of the tax base. So by using the but-for clause and making certain that that's in place, you are able to increase the value of property. This is a fabulous piece of property now that this community has made an investment in removing those things that would make it an even playing field in terms of development, where a developer would come along and say this is an equivalent value for us to develop as it would be up on the hill where there's tons of expansion. This is redevelopment in the downtown area near the river, critical to Highway 169. And that occurred, and that was legitimate. It wasn't about hiding property taxes from the public or stealing from one to do the other. It was to really capture this land for its true capacity, for tax capacity. Then, and the original project on this property would have been able to pay off the increment because of the size. That's changed. 9/11 changed this. No investment occurred. So time has passed. The development that's on the piece of property that was the original tax increment district that we're now trying to expand, the new development is not the same size, doesn't have the same capacity. So we need to broaden the tax area, the increment area, in order for the entire development that's going to go on there has the capacity to pay off what was legitimate investments originally, because without them, this would have been too expensive a property to develop, equivalent to other properties that are in other development areas in the state. I think it's really important to remember that, and that this community, certainly maybe others as well, got caught in a situation in which this is occurring. Without this, it really is impossible for the community to recapture this. And in terms of your question about how far are they from the levy limits, I would have to defer. They're right up at them, apparently.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe the mayor can answer this. Maybe I'm misunderstanding this parcel, but I don't think the new parcel that you want to bring in 18, 19 years later, for the discussion on the but-for here, and Representative Seifert raised it, and now Senator Sharon, I don't think it qualifies for the but-for, does it? It would not meet state law for a redevelopment TIF, isn't that right? Isn't that the problem?
Well, had we, Madam Chair, had we included this additional real estate at the time, the original point at which we tried to meet the but-for test in the original formation of the district, I believe it would have met all the tests at that time.
Well, Mr. Chair, but I don't mean then, because we don't have those TIF districts anymore because they were really liberal and bipartisanly, I think people figured out that they were giving away too much money to developers at the expense of taxpayers, so those 1990 TIF districts aren't allowed anymore. And I think that's really what, in my estimation, what might be going on here is there's more lenient rules back then. So let's bring in a new parcel back in the 1990s rules that don't apply anymore, as opposed to the tougher rules now that have been changed not recently but for many years, and that this parcel would not meet the but-for test. It would not qualify as a redevelopment TIF district. And so I think there's a lot of things going on here that, I just think members who are interested in TIF, and I know across the legislature there aren't many. Of 201 legislators, I'd say there's less than five. But they have enormous impact with public dollars, and I don't think we want to go down this road. Maybe nobody else cares but me. But I do care, and it's not about North Mankato. If we're going to let people add parcels 18, 19 years later, ignore all the new rules, and have things that don't meet the redevelopment TIF, here they all come. I mean, I think it's a problem, Mr. Chair. I guess one thing I would offer up, maybe the city could think about, asking us to give authority to let you abate their taxes. There's been times where cities have requested that they just have an abatement and just make it clear to the public, we're not going to make that person pay taxes. And the public knows that they're not paying taxes. And then if the county and school could agree that they'd get their share, could maybe do a city-only abatement. I don't know. It's something to think about.
Money.
Mr. Mayor, doesn't give you any money.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, we did think about the abatement process, but we believe that in the attempt to recoup already expended costs, already embedded costs here, that the expansion of the TIF district was the simplest way to do that. We're not asking to spend new dollars in a TIF. We're only asking to recover dollars we already spent in pursuit of a project on that site. So in 2001, when the City Council modified the plan for the tax increment district, it did meet the test at that time. Had we expanded the district at that time, I believe it would have met the rules then in effect.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, and maybe the mayor can answer. The parcel, is this on 169 when you look to the left off, going north off Belgrade is kind of where we're at?
Correct.
My in-laws have lived there for 20 years, but so that's in Lower North Mankato.
Correct.
Essentially, if this doesn't pass, what's going to happen down there? Just as we're kind of at a standstill?
Representative Seifert, we expect that the first phase of this project will go forward in any event. What the city hopes to do here is recover its costs, so the benefit is directly to the city. If this were not approved, we would have to find some other method to recoup those costs or simply write them off, because we need to go forward with a development on the site in any event.
Didn't we authorize a sales tax increase last year? What is that available? Is it dedicated to other things?
Portions of the sales tax are dedicated to our downtown redevelopment plan. And $190,000 of that money is going to support this phase one development on this site, along with a deed grant that will help pay for some public infrastructure. So we are using a portion of those revenues to be generated from the sales tax to support the downtown redevelopment.
Mr. Chair, I don't know what
streams.
I don't want to vote against my own chair here, but I think what they're saying is that it's a little unconventional, but it sounds reasonable to me in terms of the what they're trying to do if it's a one-time deal. But, I'm just one person out of five over here. To me, it would seem to, if it's a one-time thing, and this expansion on phase two and three are the ones that are really the big issue on Butt Four, is what you're saying?
Correct.
I guess we would go back, Representative, to the original Butt Four test when we created the district. We believe it met all those tests at that time. We understand that the requirements have changed over time, but this district has existed all through that time period.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lencheski.
Mr. Chair, can I ask Mr. Michael a question? Maybe Mr. Michael can help all the conferees think through this a little bit. Can you think of a time that Mr. Michael, that we've allowed a parcel to come in 18 years after the fact?
Mayor, I don't think we're going to get it done today. The Senate's not quite going to give up, though.
Okay. Well, we appreciate your.
I think if we give the House a few more days, they may. We might be more persuasive.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for coming down. St. Louis Park. Let's hear from St. Louis Park. St. Louis Park is on page 72, Senate section 25. Madam Chair, this is when we were going through the local development article the other night. Senator Latz wasn't available. Sure. Nobody from St. Louis Park was here, so I thought it would be important we give them an opportunity. It seems, Madam Chair, it seems pretty similar to the Minnetonka situation that you've got in the bill. So I'd like to have the St. Louis Park an opportunity to make their case. Senator Latz, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members. I have with me the city director, manager, Tom Harmoning. He's also a former economic development director for a neighboring city. And also with Tom is Kevin Locke, the city's director of development. And I'd like to ask Mr. Harmoning and Mr. Locke to explain the specifics regarding this particular request.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, thanks for having us here this evening. We are looking or requesting the legislature to consider extending the life of what we call the Elmwood Tax Increment District from 15 years to 25 years. We created this district about 4 years ago. It is located near Highway 100 and Highway 7, more particularly right adjacent to Highway 7 and Wooddale Avenue. Some notable characteristics about the district. It's where the Hoygaard's store used to be located, if you're familiar with that store, and the Southwest Transit Corridor runs right through this site. In fact, there's a future light rail station located right at 7 in Wooddale. As I said, we created the district about 4 years ago. At the time, we felt we only needed a district that lasted as long as 15 years, so we created a renewal and renovation district, and we based that on certain assumptions regarding the amount of development that would take place and the tax increment that would be generated. As it turned out, those assumptions aren't panning out given what's happened in the economy and the amount of increment that we're able to derive from that district. And in hindsight, what we probably should have done, if I could do it again, is we would have taken the steps to qualify that district as a redevelopment district, which has a 25-year life, but that's not what we did. So that's why we're here today. It's some of the more pressing projects that are coming before us in this area and in this district is our infrastructure related, most notably, and the construction of an interchange at Highway 7 in Wooddale. It's about a $19 million project. We've been able to pull together a variety of funding sources for that project, but we're still short at least $3 million on that. There are other infrastructure-related and redevelopment needs in that area as well. So it does have some similarity to Minnetonka, as I understand it. I'm not intimately familiar with their bill, but again, we're looking to extend this from 15 to 25 years. With me, as Senator Latz pointed out, is Kevin Locke, our Community Development Director, and we're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Seem like Minnetonka, Madam Chair?
Well,
it does seem pretty similar.
Maybe it is, but if the information that we saw on the House side is accurate, I don't think it is, and so maybe you can help me understand it better. The Minnetonka situation, we believed they could have, when they certified the district, they could have qualified for a renewal and renovation or a redevelopment. And they chose renewal and renovation. And so what we were saying is because they qualified for redevelopment, we'd give them the extra. I don't think this, if I understand it right, I don't think your project would have qualified as redevelopment. Is that correct?
Well, we anticipated that question, Representative Lincheski, Chair Lincheski, and we did a real back-of-the-napkin calculation this afternoon, and really without much effort, we were able to find that we were very, very close to being able to qualify that district as a redevelopment district. And I think the point I'm trying to make is that if we truly wanted to qualify that area as a redevelopment district, I think we could probably find a way to do that. It's just at the time, we really didn't spend the time and energy on it because we didn't think we needed that much increment. So we didn't qualify it as we didn't try to qualify it as a redevelopment district. But have we done a thorough analysis using an outside party like we normally do recently to see if we could qualify that as a redevelopment district? No, we have not done that.
Mr. Chair?
Madam Chair, go ahead.
Well, I think in the Minnetonka situation, the language says that they have to be able to show that they could qualify as a redevelopment at the time they certified, not today, at the time of certification. And I think we'd be looking for the same thing with your community, and maybe you can give us that information. Not would you qualify today, 15 years later, with more blight or something, but back when you made the decision,
right,
would you qualify? And so if you would qualify for redevelopment, I'd be open to hearing about that. But, Mr. Chair, if I may, I think it's good to take a minute to just ask for committee members to remember, or maybe they never knew. Can Mr. Michael tell us what is the difference between a renewal and renovation district and a redevelopment district, and how long are they, and what do you have to do to qualify? Because they're not the same thing. If that's okay.
Mr. Michael, go ahead. And Madam Chair, how do we do that 4 years later?
Well, Mr. Chair, they should. I would guess that their assessors and their city knows what situation things were in then. And I'll just, lest people think these things don't matter, I'll just recall for everybody the Best Buy redevelopment and all the lawsuits that went on over what percentage of the structures were substandard. And for folks who are around for that one, they're not little things. And so, I mean, I guess what I'd say is if St. Louis Park can show us that they met it, I would be open to doing it at the Minnetonka, what we did with Minnetonka. And maybe they can. It sounds like they're pretty confident they can show us that. But we didn't have any information that made us think that when we reviewed it originally in the House.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, we would certainly be happy to provide you whatever information you're interested in having. Perhaps as a point of clarification, when we are attempting to qualify a tax increment district under the law, we hire an outside firm to come in and do that, and that is something that takes, you know, weeks of time, not just a couple, 3 days of time in order to do that. So if you're looking for that kind of analysis, I don't think we can accommodate the request because I don't think the timing allows for that. If you're looking for something that's maybe more informal, we can certainly try to do that.
Well, I think the chair, if we're going to do it this year, I think the chair would like something more than what we have today.
Okay.
So why don't you see if you can go to work on that? And seems like we can get the right information, and it looks like Minnetonka's, we can maybe do something.
May I make one more point of clarification, Mr. Chair? Given the circumstances in the economy, we're not looking to create or garner more tax increment by extending the 10 years. Extending it by 10 years, what we're trying to basically accomplish is over 25 years collect the same amount of tax increment we were hoping to collect over 15 years. So it's not as if we're trying to grab more money now 4 years after the fact. It's just we know the obligations that we have, and we're just trying to meet those obligations. We haven't added new things to the pot, so to speak, to get done.
Representative Chesky.
Can I just add Representative Simon is now here, who's talked to me about this, and it was his bill in the House, and he's been working it really hard. And I guess, you know,
not hard enough, apparently.
No, he's worked it very hard. But I guess I would just say, you know, it just gives me pause that 4 years into a district, people are already wondering if their district works. And you know, I don't know if it's the people that the cities are hiring who are folks aren't thinking this through, or I'm not sure, because this decision was only made 4 years ago. 4 years into a 15-year district, people now think they need 25. And I just wonder sometimes, nothing to do with your city, just sort of who are the consultants that aren't helping people think this through? I don't know. It's a little concerning. Because when people make the decision to do this and certify, it's a commitment. So, but I appreciate Representative Simons here and Senator Latz. But I think if the city can give us some better information, it could help.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman and Chair Lencheski, the last 4 years are only four calendar years, but they're light years in terms of the availability of financing for development and the market for condos and apartments. And retail, I mean, the economy has shifted dramatically in the last year alone. So projections made 4 years ago, lots of people will tell you they were off base in terms of what's actually happened in the last year or two. And that's affected the developments in the Elmwood District as well. The financing ability, the property values, the potential increment that would be thrown off of those developments have all been affected negatively because of the economic situation. If you have a harder time selling those condos, your property values for the condo building are going to be lower, and that's the situation that this particular district is in. So the fact they're only 4 years into it shouldn't be the deciding factor here. They've got to recalculate now how long it's going to take to deal with the costs that are already fixed and escalating with a lower economic return because the economy has had problems.
Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, and I wouldn't expect you to know this because you're not on the tax conference committee, but a couple days ago, we actually do have a menu of flexibility issues for all TIF districts in the state that we just agreed to that recognize that we are in a very different time. But they do not include this option. But we did come up with a compromise in a number of areas as it relates to all TIF districts in the state to just recognize that the very fact that you raised. And so I appreciate that. And you're right. But I wanted you to know that we are cognizant of that, and we put together three different provisions that will help all TIF districts in the state to deal with that issue.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz.
I appreciate that, Madam Chair, but to your point about not being sufficiently future-looking to understand what the situation was going to be, projecting it down the road, City of St. Louis Park wasn't able to project that this is what the economy would do to their projected revenues, and now they're in this position. Thank you for hearing it.
Representative Simon, why don't you switch chairs with Senator Latz and give the Senate a hand here, would you?
Allow me to represent Simon.
Representative Simon, help me convince your House tax chair that this is something your community that you represent needs.
Well, I'm sorry I'm late here to the Mr. Chair. Thank you. Or I don't know who has the gavel. Senator Bach. Okay, Mr. Chair. I'm late here, obviously. I just got out of another conference committee, so I didn't hear what's already been said. I suspect you've already heard the testimony. We had a good testimony also in the House Tax Committee, and I defer to whatever Senator Latz said. I'm handicapped here to some extent, and our good folks from the city here, who I know work very hard and use very good judgment, and they're thought of very highly in our community. And so I defer to them on a lot of issues, not just this issue, and I trust their judgment. So that's all I can say, having come late, but thank you for your time and consideration.
Not tonight, Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair,
they're in the transit TIF zone, Dibble's bill. Later, if they get the Southwest Corridor, they'll be with Senator Dibble on TIF for transit.
We're going to be able to do something on that, do you think? Why don't we do this instead? Why don't we do this instead?
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman and gentlemen, if you're not given the extension of 10 years, what's going to happen to your project?
Well, I think the most direct impact will be a continued gap in this very significant infrastructure project that is ready to go right now. We've basically cobbled together federal money through the STP program. We've gotten about $3.5 million in stimulus funding from the Met Council and the state. And the city has $5.6 million of its own money in a $19 million project that has regional benefits. So, and we've spent most of that money ourselves. So I don't know where the other $3 million comes from right now, but it could result in us having an even larger gap, because if we don't spend the stimulus money, then we lose it. And then I've just got to find another $3.5 million. So the most immediate impact is I've got to find another $3 million someplace. I'm not sure where I'm going to get that. And if the project doesn't proceed, then I've got, we've got, the state and the city have larger transportation issues at that interchange, both from a vehicle and a pedestrian perspective. That's the most immediate impact. There's some other redevelopment issues in the area, as well as some other transportation issues. But if you wanted the most obvious impact, it's that interchange improvement. That MnDOT, by the way, supports quite highly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming down. I thought we had one more.
Torture us.
If we didn't have that darn rule, we'd torture you longer. Representative Knuth, do you have any luck with Senator Chaudhry? Nothing's changed on Arden Hills yet? Okay, well, we won't forget about it. That's helpful. I did express to Mr. McGran that we'd take up Arden Hills maybe tomorrow or the day after. Does the, I believe there was some kind of an open house up on the site tonight or up at the city, so the mayor was kind of locked into having to apparently be at that open house. Property taxes? Property tax article. Members, Senator Scoy and Representative Marquardt went through the side-by-side on the property tax article today, and I think they've found some pieces we can probably move and get off the plate here. So who would like to start?
Well, Mr. Chair.
What page are we on?
We're going to start on page 34 of the updated side-by-side. We're all working on different side-by-sides because they changed kind of in the middle, but. And I think, Mr. Chair, we'd like to start on the Senate Article 4, Section 2, the inter-district cooperation.
Mr. Chair and Representative Scoy, I tried to get a hold of Tim Strom today, and we weren't able to do that yet. And so, that's an education type of item. I'd like to make sure that's okay. So if we could come back to that one tomorrow or the next day.
Mr.
Chair. Senator Scoy.
Sure, we can come back to it. Maybe if you give me just a couple sentences to tell everybody what it is. There's four school districts in the state that share career and technical programs. So it's two school districts in each program. And this language just allows them to allocate the levy for the program between the two districts that are in it. It's relatively straightforward, but if you want, we can come back to it.
I believe these are, is this up in Senator Stump's district?
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is Senator Stump's district.
Senator Marquardt, would you like to hold on that?
Mr. Chair, if we could.
Okay.
And then, Mr. Chair, if we could move to Senate Article 4, Section 4, Retired Employee Health Benefits. This is, Mr. Chair, Department of Ed language correction in last year's bill. This is the way in the House and the Senate have similar but not quite identical provisions. And I don't know if somebody wants to explain the difference.
And Madam Chair, we
send the
chair's letter.
Right.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we sent, you and I sent a joint letter to Commissioner Segrin over at Education to clarify our intent, and this language, I think, clarifies what we had intended to do last year. I don't know what the difference is between the two House and Senate provisions. Senate language just takes care of the subject of the letter. So Representative Markwart moves Senate Article 4, Section 4. Any questions? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no, the motion prevails.
And Mr. Chair, we have Representative Hilty and Senator Lori provision. It's actually Section 5 and Section 56 that go together, and this is the ambulance and fire service district that the city of Cloquet and Perch Township were requesting. Mr. Chair and members, if you remember, this fire and ambulance district is currently levying about $1,100,000. We did some changes in the Senate to the original bill as it was introduced so that they would be levying off of a I'm trying to come up with the language right now. 56. Where do I have that? Yeah, I lost the page.
Page 48.
Thank you.
Section Senate Section 56 on page 48.
Yeah, there it is.
Mr. Chair.
So this allows the City of Cloquet and Perch Lake Township to create a special tax and district for fire and ambulance services. Representative Hilty's provision.
And Mr. Chair, y'all, that one concern, I was looking at that rate, which was 0.2835% of taxable market value, which is be about $283 on a $100,000 home. But this is the amount they were levying, so that's not any more than the 1.1. So I
we backed into their current budget with our tax rate. The bill, as it was introduced, actually had a dollar amount in it. And we didn't want to put a dollar amount in statute, so we backed into a rate.
You want me to move?
Senator Skoy moves Senate Article. Representative Seifert?
The one question I had, Mr. Chair, was the one that Representative Markwart raised, was the cost of it. The second one was they can't do this now with the ability of busting levy limits for police and fire. Within their own budgets, or am I missing something?
It's a special taxing district, allows them to levy across more than one unit of government
for the township and the city.
Township and the city.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, if you look at Section 5, we're actually giving them where they have partial districts, that those partial districts would get one single member, and this is currently what the area that they're servicing.
And this is only for that area of the state, Mr. Chair?
Yep.
Is it Section 5?
Section 5 on page.
And we're doing both of them?
Do both of them, yes.
Senator Skoy moves Senate Article 4, Section 5, and Section 56. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no, the motion prevails. Representative Hilty will sleep good tonight. Senator Lori? How about that? We got it done. You didn't have to. Good night. Sometimes less said is better.
You know, I wonder if we could move beyond the Institute of Public Charity. I think that might take a little while. And could we come back to that?
Yep, I think we probably should. We should let the nonprofits know when we're going to take that up, just to make sure they're going to adequately represented here. And we didn't, I didn't let anybody know we were going to take that up tonight.
Mr. Chair, they're well represented tonight as they have been all year.
They all assume 100 meetings to take it up tonight.
So they can probably do that anytime.
Well, but we want to get the assessors on the record, I think,
okay. Yep.
In addition to the department. So maybe tomorrow or Wednesday. Let's get some things we know we can get done. Sir, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, we did some discussion on Senate Article 4, Section 8, and this is the apprenticeship training facility. And I think we reached some agreement on the language, but I don't know, Representative Marquardt, if we made enough progress on the amount of acres that we were going to allow proportionally to be included in this or not.
Mr. Chair and Representative Scoy, yeah, the question was, it does expand the groups, like the nonprofits or trust and so forth, which I'd like some clarification on, but the one area then we did not agree on as far as how many acres that would be appropriate. So we're probably still up in the air on this.
I think the problem came in, Representative Marquardt, when last year when we passed this language, we said you had to be a 501c3 nonprofit, I think.
Nonprofit corporation.
Or nonprofit corporation.
Yeah, and we needed to go to a nonprofit trust.
Or organization.
Or organization.
And the situation happened here in St. Paul. The Ramsey County assessor determined that the Carpenters Training Center, because it was run by a labor management trust, that it didn't meet the definition in the law. And I think that was kind of splitting hairs, but so that was the reason for coming forward with the change to an organization. And then last year's language, and I don't know why, I just assumed we did the land on a prorated basis to whatever the building is, and as it turns out, I learned afterwards that we specifically excluded the land.
Right.
And our intent always was to be able to get the, I think my intent was, and I carried the bill, was to be able to, at a minimum, get the parking areas on a prorated basis, depending on what percentage of the building was being used for apprenticeship and training purposes. So just, I think, an oversight on my part that the land ended up omitted. I mean, clearly the parking that's being used for the training facility, I would think, should be exempt also. So that was the reason, Representative Marquardt, to take a look at the land issue.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like, as I looked at this further, I'd like to see exactly how much we're expanding it. We're moving just from a nonprofit corporation to a nonprofit trust. I mean, I just don't know for sure. And I think, you know, I know specifically it was an expansion last year when we went to buildings. And I didn't think land would be included in that. And so now we're going up to 5 acres. So I just, can we hold off on this one for tonight?
I want to read the language here.
Page 73 of the Senate bill.
Madam Chair, it isn't any different than a technical college, and we don't tax them. It's provided. Can't get there yet tonight? Doesn't seem that hard.
Yeah, let's, Mr. Chair, let's hold off on this as I look at some of this.
We're not doing very well yet, Mr. Chair. We're
going to be here a long time if we got to get out on Thursday night.
I guess.
All right.
It's all right. Representative Loeffler, you want to, should we try to do the elder living facility?
Sure.
What's the problem with that? Well, Senator Pogomiller had this bill, H-36, Senate Article 12, and it kind of seemed like a slam dunk to the Senate. I'm a little surprised. But one did you hear the bill? They made a very good argument.
Mr.
That it should be. So our House tax conferee was not able to get this in the bill. He's going to try. I bet you he's going to.
Mr. Chair, we are honored today to have someone from Catholic Elder Care in my part of the world to answer anyone's questions about this facility.
Let's hear from him. Anybody who sticks around room 15 till 11 o'clock at night should have an opportunity to tell us about the project. It just seemed like a...
Is Ms. Broderick here?
Mr. Kozak?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Andrew Kozak, and I represent Catholic Elder Care in Northeast Minneapolis. With me tonight, and she'll be returning momentarily, is just stepped out, is Mary Broderick, who up until a month ago was the longtime 10-year CEO and president of Catholic Elder Care. And this is what we'll try to do very briefly for the benefit of the conferees is explain exactly what the project, the contemplated project is that we're seeking the tax exemption for, and explain why we feel the project has some unique aspects to it that we think warrant the committee's consideration of this exemption. And I'll ask Mayor Broderick to introduce herself, and she can explain what it is we're about, what Catholic Elder Care is very briefly, and then what the project is and why we think, in order for the project to go forward, because it's in the planning stages right now, why the project cannot be built without this exemption.
Broderick, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you very much for having me, Senator Buck. I am the former president and CEO of Catholic Elder Care. I just retired within the last several weeks, so I was involved in the planning of this project, and that's why I'm here on behalf of Catholic Elder Care. Catholic Elder Care is a Northeast Minneapolis nonprofit senior services organization serving about 400 seniors at any given time, about half of whom are low-income, requiring subsidy in full or part. We work creatively with government subsidy programs, our own fundraising, and the market rate half of this to pull off being able to serve of our community, and the people who reside at Catholic Elder Care very much reflect the senior demographics of Northeast Minneapolis. Now, we have long waiting lists for our present subsidized units, and that has prompted us to want to respond by building another facility on our campus in Northeast Minneapolis, our Main Street campus. We want to build a senior housing and services facility of 65 units. Again, we want half of them to serve people of lower income, those seniors at 50% of the median or lower. And we are talking with the Minneapolis Housing Authority about some of those units being Section 8, so they would serve the very poor. We can't proceed on the project without a property tax exemption. This relief would allow us to subsidize those low-income tenants to the rate of $150 to $200 a month because of the property tax not being there. We need a permanent exemption to secure the financing we know that the assessors have discretion, that you've been working on this, but we really need to be assured into the future that the exemption will stand. Long-term financing can't be structured around future uncertainties, and this is why the exemption is so important to us.
Representative Markworth.
Mr. Chair, I really appreciate the testimony. How is this senior housing different from any others that would be paying property taxes?
Well, we're mixing subsidized and market rate in a proportion that's comparable to our community. We have a very strong commitment to serve our community to the entire economic range. And other surveys, we have the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority providing some low-income services across the city, and then much of the assisted and independent, of course, in the city is market rate and not accessible.
Mr. Chair.
Markworth.
I mean, I think this is serving a very important clientele. You know, we're just working right now on putting together a nonprofit bill that is somehow trying to make sense of the North Star standards. And, you know, I think we should let that stand on its own weight. I mean, if it qualifies, it qualifies. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Regardless of the language we go with, ultimately, reasonable, justifiable reason and that type of thing. Whatever we go, I mean, assessors do have some leeway to make this call. But this, to me, appears to be someone coming in with an exception. And if we allow this, I mean, then there's no sense in having this bill we're dealing with to try to deal with the North Star. We'll just deal with them all individually. But so, you know, I'm going to speak against this, but I mean, what we're trying to do is get some uniformity with this, where assessors can, you know, look at that North Star standard. You know, we just had the Department of Revenue, we had the nonprofits, we had the assessors that met 14 or 15 times. They came up with like 24 bill drafts trying to get one. There's a lot of work involved, and while I think this is, you know, is a very noble cause what they're doing here, I just think it's moving in. Yeah, I mean, I think we don't know for sure if they would qualify or not. An assessor would have to come out here, but I don't think we can start carving out exceptions from what we're doing here. So I mean, I just think that's a real slippery slope to start heading down, and it's going to totally undermine what we're trying to do with this nonprofit bill. So. I don't know if this can be tightened up some way, but I don't want to go back and try to change what we've been working on, what all the nonprofits have been working on with the Department of Revenue and Assessors the last year and a half.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Seifert. Catholic Chair. Charities, Representative Seifert. Catholic Charities. Yeah.
There's a majority of Romans on this side of the table, Mr. Chair. So
why is this so hard?
I guess for me, I'm wondering you know, the but-for test gets used in TIF a lot and so forth, but for this, will this facility just end up not getting finance and thus not being constructed and not serving the people that need the help?
That is what we expect. That would be the natural set of circumstances, that we would not be able to serve these people and we would not be able to go forward.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Seifert, just to amplify that, right now, as we all know, we certainly appreciate what Representative Margaret said about the exceptions, particularly given the hard work that all the folks have done in trying to come up with some kind of uniform standard. However, in this case, I know that everyone can come in here with a story about an exception, and I guess all we're asking the committee to do is consider this, that apropos to what Representative Seifert suggested, the financing on this project, even under the best of circumstances, would be exceedingly difficult. Under current market conditions, even more difficult than that. it's the considered judgment of the finance people and the attorneys in having preliminary discussions with the financing, the banks or whomever, is that without something in the law that says that this project would be exempt, notwithstanding any of the vagaries of changing policy or court decisions, that this would be specific enough that we can't get the financing for the length that's required, 20 to 25 years, without the assurance to those lenders that exemption is going to be here, because without it, the project won't work. You could not charge the kind of rents they're contemplating for a good portion of the people, i.e. the lower-income people, and make this project work.
Representative Markberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Mr. Michael would know if the city of Minneapolis could just abate the taxes to help make this work.
Is this the second of a two-phase project?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is. In 2003, I believe, Catholic Elder Care faced a similar dilemma in financing the previous expansion, which is quite similar to what we're talking about here. And the legislature did grant that exemption, and because of that, the financing was approved. Without that, that project would not have gone. And I think there are 25 units of HUD Section 8 housing in there, as well as I think about half the units are subsidized in one fashion or another.
That's correct.
So you're asking for the same thing for this phase that you had for the previous one?
Yes.
Why do you House people make everything so hard?
Mr. Chair.
That's because you have 30 members on that committee. With 30 people on a committee, of course somebody's going to have an objection to something.
I'm not even on the committee, Mr. Chair. I just figure if I vote against her enough, I'll get kicked off of this thing. It's all strategy.
So, Cypher, don't you think we should do something like this?
I'd move the provision. I think it makes a lot of sense. We did it for the first one.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler?
Part of, I think, what's going on is just there's a lot of uncertainty right now, not just in the financing market, but also just because we've had this group dealing with all the nuances of the Rainbow decision, and so things haven't really settled out. And so you have a number of entities and the market that aren't sure how it's going to be applied, even though the intent is that it's pretty much maintaining current interpretations going forward. And so I think that to secure financing and to make business plans, I think we're seeing a number of entities that feel like either they weren't, I wasn't at those 15 meetings, didn't, that there wasn't a lot of time and attention to particular types of facilities and properties, and that it was really focused more on the social service nonprofits as opposed to an arts nonprofit or this type of thing. And at the time that we were putting together our House bill, I didn't bring it forward because Representative Markert was working on the nursing home provision. And, you know, that's a different type of senior housing. And so we were waiting to see kind of what the recommendations were on senior housing in general.
So, Markert, what do you think?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it should stand on its own in comparison to, well, it compares to the North Star standards. And assessors do have some wiggle room. I mean, they can look at each of the factors. But I do think right out of the gate, you know, the Kentucky Derby was just run. And just right out of the gate here, as we're trying to get some uniformity, now we're going to make an exception. And, you know, the fact that there was an exception made legislatively, you know, ever how many years ago, doesn't make it right to do it again. And, you know, the chair went back 70-some years to look at our income tax code and didn't think that was sacred. And so I don't know if because of something we did ever how many years ago should, you know, be held for the rest of time.
So, Mark, what you're making my case for the personal property tax exemption for peaking utility plants just because we've done it in the past.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, a lot of things done in the past for good policy, and we wouldn't want to change those. But, I mean, you look and decide what's good policy, what's bad policy. Change the bad.
You guys like to vote or hold or what would you like to do? What would the House like to do? I think the Senate has 3 votes for this provision. So, Conan, what do you think? We got 3 votes on the House side.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not so sure that you do.
Looking for a little help. Representative Loeffler, what do you think? Take a vote, or should we?
Well, just
should we give you a little extra
signals
time to,
from down at the end of the table, maybe we're going to have to work on this one a little bit longer.
A little more? They're tough here tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, let's take a little more time to think about this one. Did you guys meet earlier today?
Well, I'm going to have to show them how it's done, I guess. I don't suppose there's any, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to write hold on that provision.
What does hold mean?
Hold means we're going to come back to it, but Representative Loeffler and Representative Cipher got to give me a little help here on that one.
We weren't dealing, Mr. Chair, with any of these electrical generating plants, so we're not. Let's see.
Well, if we can't do that elder care, you think we're going to get that? I think we're going to take care of 22 power plants with hundreds of millions of dollars of property tax exemption?
Mr. Chair, I don't suppose Representative Marquardt wants to tackle our least seasonal rec plan.
Oh,
so.
Please.
Can we do it tonight? Should we do it tonight?
15.
We're ready.
No.
Madam Chair, when we get to that provision, you know, we don't get thanked often enough, I think, by some people we do things for. But I got a letter from somebody I'm going to bring down and read to you when we take up this lease provision from, I remember it was a constituent of mine. I don't know the individual, but I'm assuming that you probably got one. Really? I have to remember, Senator Squire, to bring down a letter that I received about the committee's work last year.
That was good.
Actually, it was pretty touching. Apparently, we haven't resolved all the issues around that issue yet. Senator Saxock told me that he really only needs 2 additional counties. But I would. Then we'll be back with that issue again next year.
Just as well resolved.
But not tonight, I guess. I don't have my letter here, so I'm not prepared.
Let's try a House provision. Okay. Maybe we'd have better luck with that.
Have they got one that's worth doing?
Well, I think we could look at Article 6, Section 7. See if we can make any progress. All right.
Mr. Chair, this that's page 38. Article 6, Section 7. This is the part with the wind energy production tax where we're changing the 6% that was going to the school districts. Now it would go to the city or township. Right now it's 80% to the county, 14% to the city or township, and this would move, it'd make it 80-20, 80% in the county and 20% in the city or township.
So is the school portion currently their state aid offset by the amount they receive?
That's correct.
And what does Representative Greiling think of this? Not that I want to carry her water, but
I think she punted and passed it to us. Well, to be fair, I think what she said is I don't know what her position was, but because her bill was putting all the money into classroom, she didn't do any spending on specific things. So I think this one, I don't know. I don't know what it costs. Costs something, doesn't it? Ten. $680,000.
Costs $680,000 of general fund.
Yes, and 12 and 13.
In 12 and 13, that's for the state aid offset.
Oh.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the thing is here is since wind is just starting, if we're ever going to fix this, right now it costs that. You know, in 20 years it could cost $30 million. And I don't think the way it was – you know, I don't know who came up with it, but I don't think they did it right. And I think there's a recognition of that here because it was done as a state aid offset as opposed to put into a levy so that the property taxpayers would benefit. And so these host communities are now making the argument, you know, we're getting nothing from it. We don't get reduced property taxes, and our schools don't get any money because it's an offset to the state. So I think these legislators are trying to say, you know, shouldn't we get something from it? And so they're willing to put the 6% that was going into the school districts, if I have it correctly, instead into city or town, thereby it's direct property tax relief. It's currently the way it's working, they're getting nothing for it. Unless I don't quite understand that. They actually wanted transition aid as well. And we said no.
Representative Lucheski, I think we could do some business here. In the 2007 tax bill, we had a little provision that did the same thing for Taconite money that went to school districts because they too have the same offset issue. I think it was about $1 million, if I remember right, of lost state aid because there's some Taconite production tax money that goes into schools. And it's exactly the same issue. So maybe if we're going to resolve this, we should do it for both. Let's get it done.
Mr. Chair, maybe we, if I may, maybe we should think about that. I'd want to talk to Ms. Baker about that a little bit or have her get in on this. I don't know if that's tonight or what, but I thought that in the taconite formulas there are some revenue streams that recognize the issue you just raised and people are compensated for that.
There some of the taconite aid that goes to schools, it actually specifies that there's not a state offset, but there also is some, I believe, where there is a state offset. So I guess I'd like to explore that. And it seems to me the number in the 2007 tax bill, when I thought we got that issue resolved, was about $1 million. And then that bill, remember, ended up getting vetoed. But
Mr. Chair.
Getting him and Karen up. You want to have them weigh in on it?
Why don't we find out?
And Karen Baker, they both know.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just talking with Mr. Nauman, but I see he's coming to the table, so maybe I won't have to repeat what he told me. But we're evidently in conflict with the Senate K-12 bill if we were to take this provision. Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair, I just walked in to say goodnight to my spouse.
Is she going home?
No, I was hoping to. In actual fact, the K-12 Conference Committee had sort of a jurisdictional conversation about this point, and I think the intent is to have the K-12 Conference Committee chair speak with the two chairs of this conference committee, because what the Senate K-12 bill does is take that 6% wind energy production tax and distribute it 50% to the Windy School District, allowing them to keep 50% of the revenue, or basically that 3%, and then the other 3% gets deposited in the Permanent School Trust Fund. However, if you adopt this position, that revenue goes away. So there is a bit of a conflict, and I think that the committees together need to figure out which direction you want to go.
Mr. Nauman, you're probably the best guy in the room to ask about the taconite aid offset. I don't need an answer tonight, but if we're gonna fix this wind thing, we should fix the taconite one at the same time.
Mr. Chairman, we'll get you an answer on that.
A number and maybe some suggested language.
Okay.
The same thing.
Thank you. I think it is.
Mr. Chair? I thought Representative Sandra Scoy at my meeting was more successful when we left the room, but we're not making much headway. But maybe we can move to Article 6.
Should we put a hold on that one? Or?
Yeah, well, it sounds that way. It sounds like we're on a hold.
A lot of days left.
Well, and that was one of our better ones. So.
Representative Demers here.
Hey, you guys came here planning to do that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Representative Demers here. He's the guy who knows all about the window that we just passed. Which I would realize he was here.
Did nobody know that there was something being carried in the K-12 bill?
I didn't know that.
I didn't know. My preference was that they would have dealt with it in K-12, but they didn't on the House side.
Dalton? Anybody know? Representative Demmer? What's the story with this wind stuff? What's the story with this wind stuff? Something we should do, or?
It's Representative Brown's bill, Representative Demmer. You know the one we're talking about now? The wind payments?
Yes.
Tomorrow. Bovine TB, Senator Scott. Can we get anything done on that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it's language that needs to get done. You know, Mr. Chair, what we did last year, we had a few little issues with it, and this provision is a correction that will make this work a lot better and more equitable, and it actually saves us a little bit of money. It saves about $100,000 because we're making these payments more accurately reflecting. Yeah. And the House and the Senate have exactly the same formula for distributing these dollars. It's just whether it's a credit or a grant.
Grant is the way to go.
But, Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, we currently have a credit, and we kind of got everybody online with that last year, and I think it would be best if we just fixed up the credit language and let it go. I don't know if the department wants to talk about this or not.
Mr. Nord, can you enlighten us a little bit on the bovine TB credit?
Sure, Mr. Chair. After last year's tax bill was passed, we ran into a number of questions and problems regarding the bovine TB language. One of which was it was limited to people who had cattle in 2007. It turns out there's people who had cattle in 2006 who were bought out, who we believe were intended to be helped, but they had been bought out in December of 2006 by the federal government, and to leave them out of the program when they were specifically bought out because they had cattle did not seem to match with intent. So in our department bill, actually, we had the provision to address the two farms that had the 2006 cattle being bought out because we thought all the buyouts were in 2007. But the other thing we ran into, there were some cases popping up where someone maybe had 10 or 20 head of cattle, 2,000 acres of farmland, and the question was whether they should get a tax credit equal to the property tax on 2,000 acres of farmland for only 10 or 20 cattle. And so we creatively studied the law, and there's a provision in the law that says that to be located within the area, cattle had to be kept in the area for part of 2007. And so we've interpreted in the area to mean that there are some limits on how many acres you can claim a credit for. Otherwise, the cost of the credit was going to escalate dramatically. And so in talking to Representative Olin and Senator Scoy over the summer to try and better ascertain legislative intent, it was determined that it would be much better to restructure the credit to be based on the number of cattle tested. And so what we've tried to do here in coming up with the $25 per cow, per animal tested, because it's not all cattle either, we basically identified what would the property tax be on 5 acres per cow, because we were told that a cow needs about 5 acres to be sustained. So we looked at the property tax on 5 acres per cow, and that's how we came up And the tax happened to be about $5 per acre. So $5 per acre times 5 acres is $25 per cow. And so that's how we arrived at the language that we have today. And again, the language is very similar between the House and the Senate. It's just the House prefers to handle it as a grant program, and the Senate would like to continue it as a property tax credit. So
Mr. Nord, you called that a creative reading of the statute?
Well, Mr. Chair, there wasn't much statute to read, so
that's what I was afraid of.
So we had to read every word very carefully. So.
Senator Scoy, was that 5 acres for a cow? Is that sound about right? Or?
Oh, Mr. Chair, Mr. Nord, I don't know when he was last ranching cattle, but he did a good job of explaining that, and that's about what it is, about 5 acres an animal. And he's absolutely right. There was a couple of operations that had relatively small numbers of animals and relatively large numbers of acres, and that's not at all the individuals that we were trying to address with the credit. And just to refresh everybody's memory, what happened in the cattle industry is we split off this small provision of the state. And so everybody else in the state doesn't have to do this intensive testing program, but these people still do. And so this credit is an effort to help them with the cost that they're having of testing their animals every year and their young ones before they're marketed. And it's really quite an intensive deal, but, you know, it's helping the rest of the cattle industry in the state save a lot of money. So I'd like to see it get the language fixed.
Yeah, the one question that we had was on the grant versus the credit. Is the credit, if you're renting the landowner may not pass that credit to where a grant could be different in that regard. So that was one of the concerns, and Senator Scoy and I talked about that too. But, I don't know if it matters which way we go necessarily. It's already in state law for a credit, so. But that's one concern we have.
Does the House have any provision on this program?
Yeah, we have a grant.
There's nothing in the property tax article.
Where is it? It's income based.
No, the formula is all the same.
Do you have a page?
It's $5 per acre, 5 acres per animal.
What page?
Page.
What page?
Page
75.
75.
6. Oh, yeah.
Doesn't a grant cost more to administer? Which costs more to administer?
Mr. Chair, I don't know which one costs more to administer. Just that, you know, we just put this credit in for testing, I think it's 3 years ago on a statewide basis, and then we modified it last year to be a property tax credit for the individuals in the split state status. I mean, I don't know. I suppose we could try to get these guys to apply for a grant, but it seems to me that working through the income tax or the on their income forms or the property tax credit is consistent with what we did last year.
Well, Mr. Nord, isn't there an administration cost if we create a grant program out of it?
Mr. Chair, yeah, in the House language, I believe 5% of the dollars were set aside to cover the administrative costs for the – it's actually the Department of Agriculture that would administer the grant program. Currently, there's no administrative support for the property tax credit.
Maybe. Mr. Chair.
Representative Lucheski.
Well, while we're on it, I know we're doing the property tax article, but if you're looking at the House article – 13, section 2.
Yep.
If you just back up and look at section 1 of article 13, this is what I was getting confused on. We convert the income tax credit to a grant as well. So that's not in the property tax article, but another issue. All in the bovine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, we're not doing it. Mr. Chair, I don't think the Senate did anything with that. We just left that program alone.
Just don't want to just write these guys a check. Is that easier?
Well, they have to apply. Normally, you're not going to apply for a grant program.
Got it. Oh, I don't know. It's revenue.
Mr. Nord, if we make it a grant program, there's going to have to be some kind of an application process, I would take it. How many people are just not going to bother applying?
Yeah, they have to apply for the property tax program. I mean, they don't just automatically
apply
for
the credit. Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nord, how does it work?
Mr. Chair, there is an application process for the credit to the assessor, and so it would be a different application process. So when no longer see the availability of the property tax credit, they could be referred to the Department of Agriculture to apply for the grant if that were the case. But in either way, you'd need an application process.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Sir, let's go ahead.
Mr. Nord, now these individuals all applied this last year. Would they need to apply again?
In current law?
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, I don't think we've really dived into that. The assessor would have to learn how many animals they had tested. So the assessors may need an additional application to get that information. Or otherwise, we may have to coordinate with the Board of Animal Health to see if we can get the animal testing numbers directly to the assessors. But so I'm not exactly sure if we would require reapplication or would be able to get by with the existing applications.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Nord, these tests were done in 2007. That data isn't going to change from this year to next year. Why would we ask them to reapply when those numbers aren't going to change?
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, I think that would be feasible. In fact, we're using the highest annual test count from 2006 through 2008 because some of the farms started getting tested in different years. So, yes, but the time period that we're looking at is a closed known time period, 2006 through 2008. So that data is available. It's just a matter of getting it to the assessor and being able to line up the herd counts that the Board of Animal Health has with the correct properties. So I think there's a fair chance that we could get by without additional application. But if we have trouble lining up the herds to the parcels, there's a chance that we may have to resort to some additional information. But there's a good chance we could get by without additional application.
And one more question. Mr. Nord, what would happen if we just keep current law?
Pardon me, Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, the question was?
Mr. Nord, what would happen if we just keep current law?
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, I think if we just kept current law, we would possibly have to revisit the two farmers who got the credit based on their 2006 counts, and we would have to potentially, we would be on tenuous grounds defending limiting the credit and could be subject to some tax court decisions that might expand people's credits, and it could potentially increase the cost of the program quite significantly.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Nord, it's pretty important to get this language fixed this year, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, I definitely think it would be important to fix this issue this year.
Thank you.
What do you think, Representative Markworth?
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, part of the idea was in our tax bill was to eliminate some of these credits, and so I mean, it's got income tax implications.
guys still feel that way? For all the emails, you still feel that way?
Not afraid.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, I suppose we can fix the credit language now, and if they're successful in repealing it, they can repeal fixed language or incorrect language. It probably wouldn't matter very much. But it is important that we fix this language.
Yeah. Let's do it. When you guys sweep the barn with us. It's no funnier than raising income taxes on everyone.
We do that in our first bill. Maybe the bill we sent out here Thursday, manager. Maybe the Senate will give. We'll just sweep the deck of all those credits with you. You can try override that bill.
And put in income tax increases on everyone.
I think they've already voted for getting rid of all those credits already.
Right. No problem with that.
Representative Marker, how about if we fix the credit and we'll move on, and if we end up getting rid of all the credits, we'll get rid, at least we'll get rid of the language that's been fixed.
Right. That's
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. Mr.
Dennis Coy, where are we?
I'm going to move Senate Article 4, Sections 16 and 17.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Oh, okay. Man, we're doing business.
16 and
17. Age? 16. 30-something. Oh, getting a lot done. We're starting to move. Mr. Chair?
Is there Mark where?
Another area is Article 6, Section 9 on page 39. That's the preservation of the riparian buffers. And just a real quick review, that's taking buffer land, 50 feet minimum, 100 max, and putting it into a covenant, and which means you got to take care of it and so forth. And if you did that in an irrevocable covenant, you would be assessed at 25% of the surrounding 2B land, and if it was in a revocable covenant, 75%. We could not reach agreement on this, but we did.
Surprise!
We did, but we do have an amendment, a compromise that I've also talked to Representative Hansen about, and of course he'd like the language, but he's also approves of this. And so what it is, and do we have a copy of the amendment? I'd like to move the...
We need to pass it out.
We don't. Yeah, we need to pass it out. It doesn't have a number. But we'll get that. And what this would do is would have the Drainage Working Group, which is several organizations. And the Drainage Working Group was set up in 2007. And they would be required to do a study of riparian buffers and to come up with some recommendations dealing with environmental but also dealing with tax policy.
Representative Markford, has any of this land enrolled in other programs, RIM or CRED?
Well, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did have some discussion today with Mr. Harnack, who's worked in this area quite a bit. And, you know, what I've argued all along with regard to these riparian areas is, you know, we're giving preferential, under the proposal in the bill, we would be giving preferential tax treatment to people that basically have land that they can't do anything with anyway, because it's going to be under some kind of shoreland ordinance or some kind of wetland law or some kind of prairie or forested woodland or something where they, but they thought that there was some value in actually taking a little closer look at some of these areas. They think that in some of the rural preserve lands that we now have in law, there might be some benefit to this. What they did talk about was this drainage working group. It's a good group with a very broad cross section of stakeholders. You know, the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Watershed Districts, Farm Bureau, Farm Union, Fish and Wildlife Legislation Alliance, Association of Soil Water Conservation Districts, a broad section of folks, townships, et cetera, that have done good work in the drainage area. They brought a number of items to the legislature. They're a consensus-driven organization, and that they would be very appropriate for them to take a little look at this as an issue. I did have one bit of advice, and I think Mr. Harnack is actually on this working group, and I have talked to Mr. Peterson from the Farmers Union also. I told him, I said, if you're going to look at this, I would hope that you do it in a manner that's consistent with the green acres in the rural preserve, which is a valuation mechanism as opposed to a rate classification change. So I think it's be fine to let this drainage working group take a look at this over the summer and, you know, see if they have some consensus items that would be worth our consideration next year.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would like to make a suggestion on line 16 to delete the phrase "the legislature." That's really extremely nonspecific, and it should be something more like "to the chairs and ranking minority members of the committees with jurisdiction over agriculture policy in the House and the Senate."
Not them.
I mean, when you make a report to the legislature, you could just throw it in the air.
Yes.
It's got to be to people.
Tax committee.
Tax committee. Or to the tax committee.
We better send it to taxes.
If this is a tax policy more than it is an ag policy, but it should be to people, not to a thing.
Okay, I'll accept that.
Senator Markworth moves on line 1.6, delete "to the legislature" and insert chairs and ranking minority members of the committee with jurisdiction over tax policy.
Right.
Is March the right date, or is there a reason we went March 1st, Senator Scott?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt drafted the amendment, so I don't.
Mr. Chair, it's one, you know, it's next year. No magic to the number or the date.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rest.
The reason why I think a March 1st date is good is because it's likely that the legislature will be back in session. I mean, things like December 15th are terrible days, or January 1st, or even January 15th, but March 1st means that we'll be here and the report can actually be delivered to those folks.
The rest, you don't think we'll be here December 15th?
No, sir. Not me. I'm not going to be here.
Thinking, who was here in 1981? I think they were here December 15th.
True. They were here in Christmas.
Senator Scoy, what's Senator Vandiver going to say about the Bowser facilitating this group?
Well, maybe, Mr. Chair, we should ask Senator Johnson what she thinks about that. I know Senator Vandiver.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually would like to delete this entire section and not vote for the amendment. I don't do good with anything. I don't support any of the soil and water conservation provisions anywhere.
Mr. Chair, we found out.
Well, let's see how many votes we have. On the whose motion? Markworth's?
Yes.
On the Markworth motion, on the document entitled House Research Analyst SHASH, underline, preparing and study. Can you guys give it a little easier title next time? As amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Actually, no.
No.
The motion prevails. Doing business. So now we're not going to revisit the riparian buffers. That's in lieu of?
That's in lieu of.
And I'm sure we've actually adopted a couple provisions, so I'd suggest that maybe we should vote to hang around an extra hour. It seems like we're getting on a roll here. People just need to kind of hit hit the stride. Seems like we're getting there. How does the committee feel about the rule that says by a two-thirds majority vote we can extend our time by an hour?
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Seifert.
Mr. Chair, you know, I know that we need to get the bill wrapped up by Thursday. I was wondering, did the new joint rule say at 12:01 the gavel changes, though?
No, I don't
believe that. I sit on the Rules Committee. If I remember right, it's not legislative day, but calendar day, so it's not 7 a.m., it's 12 o'clock.
I don't even know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's got the rules.
This is what you show up to do? all the work we got to do here.
He doesn't have to do it, though. He didn't vote for the tax bill.
On the motion to extend the time by 1 hour, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Okay, let's see if we can get a little more work done. Senator Scoy, what else do you have?
Well, Mr. Chair,
suppose we should check.
We did some discussion on the marina language and the valuation of the 4C that, I don't know, I call it the bed and breakfast, but I guess it isn't exactly bed and breakfast either. No. Representative Marquardt and I discussed this quite a bit, and we just couldn't quite get ourselves to come around to how we were going to resolve the preferential property tax treatment for these individuals. The House language is broader. It's on page 41, House Article 6, Section 14, Senate Article 4, Section 19. But we did reach some agreement on the marina language that we probably could adopt that, but I think we'll have to set the I don't know what we call this, the bread and breakfast language. Representative Marquardt, did we get some agreement on the marina language that we think we can live with, understanding that the buildings stay as CI, that the public access is to the water, and we were going to go with 6 acres along the water as opposed to 5.
Is that the understanding, Representative Marquardt?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that is. You know, we couldn't come to an agreement on the 4C commercial portion because the Senate is very restricted, and I didn't want to just carve out a little area. I thought if we're going to do it, we should do it for the whole state, but we couldn't agree on that, so we decided to do nothing there. But, the marina provision, I think, would...
At least.
...is probably going to be fairly limited also.
So the motion is?
Well, I guess I don't, the way the side-by-side doesn't really specify what that language is, but we would move the Senate language that includes property used as a marina that has public access to water open to the public.
Maybe we can just move the Senate language in the bill.
Yeah, if we can find it. Article 4, section.
Article 4.
Section 19. It's on page 84 and 85. I'd like, if I'm going to be making this motion, I would incorporate on page 84, line 35, to change 5 to 6 acres.
Mr. Chair, why do we want to go to 6?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, as we have looked at this, there is actually one of these facilities that has 5.8 acres. And we think for ease of the assessors, we wouldn't want to leave this 0.8 acres hanging out there, not knowing exactly what they were going to do.
On an outlier.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Chair, the one concern that was raised earlier when we met is you know, it's not so much the acreage as it is the frontage that is of the value.
Right.
And so we wouldn't want someone carving out 6 acres that would be 100 foot wide all the way along a lake.
Right.
And I don't know how we prevent that, but that was the one concern.
Well, I don't think the assessor is going to let him do that.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, you know, in our discussion that all the buildings still keep the CI rate. The area where they do the boat storage keeps the CI rate. And these really are the income-producing parts of these businesses. And, you know, I think that, as I said earlier in this conference committee, I think that it's important that we have to, as a state, have policies that allow people access to our lakes. I mean, we're the state of 10,000 lakes. And if all these accesses become lotted up into other things, it's...
Representative Chesky.
Mr. Chair, how many of these are there? You must have some idea now that you know that someone has 5.8 acres, because last time we talked about this, nobody had any idea how many there were. Now we know somebody has 5.8 acres, so someone must have done an inventory.
I don't know the answer to that.
How'd you learn about the 5.8?
Somebody came to us and said that they knew somebody with a 5.8.
Well, I mean, I guess my concern is to write a bill for, like, one guy who had 5.8.
Would you rather have five?
I just don't know where this is going. Why not four? Why not two? Why not 10? I mean,
you know, the bill
seems like this is just like picking a number out of the air, not based on anything.
Well, because it was picked out of the air, because there was no acreage in the bill as it was introduced. And as Senator Scoy and I talked about, well, what should we put in the bill relative to these marinas? We thought, well, we ought to put some limit on it. And we just kind of arbitrarily picked 5 acres. Senator Scoy is familiar with a facility up on Lake Bemidji, and he said they've got a lot of lakeshore. We ought to put some kind of a cap on it. And we arbitrarily picked a number of 5 acres. So it wasn't in a bill draft. It was
so
very arbitrary.
I guess to, you know.
I guess if we had gotten lucky and picked 6, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Well, I know 5 acres might seem really small to you, but to, you know, we city folk, that's huge. So
it's not very big when you consider the parking area they have, and these boat storage buildings are huge.
And they need a tax break. Why, again?
Well, the buildings are going to pay.
But they're getting a tax break overall. Right?
Because,
and that's the point of this.
Well, because the land is incredibly valuable for a seasonal business. That's the issue.
Like how valuable?
Well,
what's
a foot of lakeshore on Lake Minnetonka appraised at?
This is for the people on Lake Minnetonka now?
Well, if there's a marina there.
And now I'm really concerned.
I mean,
I thought this was up in your world.
Well, it's where we have a marina.
And they're going to give public access to everybody now.
Or they're not
to get this.
Or they're not going to get it.
And that's forever. I mean, it has to be in the covenant or perpetual. It can't be for 10 years, and then you don't get the tax break anymore.
It doesn't say it. It said there's not a time limit on the public access.
So it's permanent.
If they want the lower tax rate on the land, not on the buildings.
So you need a covenant then. So we need language for that. Because, I mean, if it's like, well, we'll give you access this year to give a tax break, and next year we're thinking the economy's back, we're doing pretty good, we don't want public access anymore.
What we're trying to avoid is the private marinas from getting, because there are private ones, memberships. That's what we're trying to avoid.
So these are only public marinas? Does it say
that? They have to be open to the public, so they're not membership driven.
I'm just trying to get a little more information. So let's say it's 5 acres, and they're going to pay CI on the buildings, and they're going to get a tax break on the land, and they're going to permanently give public access. So what's the tax break worth?
The difference in the class rate between being CI on the land.
And so
in
So in some places that would be a couple hundred bucks, and in other places it would be thousands and thousands, or I'm not really understanding this.
And I think also, Mr. Chair, it would be from the commercial state general tax, the seasonal rec. Commercial or state general tax.
Well, seasonal rec still pays it.
Right, much lower percent. Yeah, it's like 5% versus 49%.
No.
Well, it comprises 5%.
You're going to make them pay at the level of year-round CI.
18? Okay, 18.
5% of the state general tax is paid by seasonal rec. 95% is paid by commercial.
But you're getting rid of the seasonal rec in your bill, right? So you're...
Well,
in your big bill?
Well, we tried that the last 2 years, too.
So you're giving up on that?
We weren't successful, so this isn't our first try at that.
I'm just really seriously, I'm trying to understand how this works, because it might be that it's just cheaper to buy public access, buy the land, let the public buy the land, than give some private entity a tax break so that others can get public access. Isn't that possible, just be cheaper to buy it?
Mr. Chair, did you hear any of this bill? Bill that came that they had this channel, this historic steamboat channel up to the docks, and they had public access coming up that channel and tying up it. It was really quite a benefit, and I actually believe that the rest of the residents on the lake would get a lot of benefit from keeping that access open to the public.
Maybe they should pay for it then.
Well, they are. It's being shifted onto them. I mean, that's where this goes. It goes to everybody else in the jurisdiction
and the county.
In the form of a shift.
And the whole county, not just people on the lake.
No, yeah.
The whole city, the whole county. So like in your county, which is huge, it's everybody. The whole county pays for these marinas to get a tax break, right? I'm just not understanding how this could be worth it.
Because these kind of marinas that store people's docks. Let me tell you how they work. I don't have, for instance, I don't have a cabin on the lake, but I have a boat. And I don't want to trailer my boat home with me every time I go to the lake. So I take it to a marina who has boat storage, and they store my boat for me. And they have a forklift that they pick my boat up out of the water, they run it down the road, and they put it on a shelf in a big building. And there's maybe 100 boats in that building. They're stacked 3 or 4 high, big building, and that's where they're stored. And when I want to go to the lake for the weekend, I call the marina, and I say, I'd like my boat in the water at 3 o'clock. I'm going to be there with my family. We're going to go out and spend the evening on the lake. They take their forklift. They go in the building. They take my boat down. They put it down. They put it in the lake. Gas it up for me, and when I get there with my family, my boat's all ready to go. I can't afford a cabin at the lake. But I don't have a place to park my boat in my yard in Coon Rapids or wherever I live. I need a place to keep my boat. These facilities are really, really important for people that don't have the resources to have a cabin at the lake. And they're on very valuable lake frontage. And oftentimes a seasonal business, the value of selling off the lakeshore for development probably has more value than selling off the seasonal business. So what happens is the same thing that happens to family resorts is when the family comes time to retire, it's worth a lot more to subdivide the waterfront for development than it is as a going concern as a seasonal business. So these things like seasonal resorts get sold off because, and there goes with it the opportunity for people who don't have a cabin access the lake. And that's the direction we're headed in Minnesota. And we're going to be the land of 10,000 lakes someday, but the only people that are going to use them are people that have enough money to have cabins. There's only about 900 resorts left. And we had, I don't know how many thousand.
Mr. Chair, but this isn't for resorts.
4,000 at one time.
Right, this is for marinas.
But it's,
how
but
many
it's,
of those are
but
there?
But it's the same issue. It's the same issue. The waterfront is very valuable, and when it comes time to turn the business over, it's worth more subdivided for cabins than it is as a seasonal type business. So the intent here is to try and make some effort to preserve the business, which is the public's opportunity to use the lake.
Well, Mr. Chair, it seems then that needs to be in a covenant permanent, because then it's just like Green Acres again, that if you don't have some clawback, payback, when later the guy says it's now, even with the tax break I'm getting, now more profitable for me to sell, because I'll make more money when I subdivide, how does the taxpayer recoup their costs that they put into this program? I mean, and you know, aren't they charging a fee to put your boat up in this thing and take it out? And
that's what the seasonal business is about.
Well, then they just have to raise their fees if it's getting too expensive to stay in business, isn't it?
So then how many more people do we exclude?
I guess I'm not thinking exclusion. I mean, it might be a cheaper deal for the state to just buy it straight up and have permanent public access.
But the public boat launch that you're thinking about doesn't deal with the fact that some people don't want to have to trailer their boat home every time they take it out of the water. Maybe they don't have a place to park it. So they need a place to keep it. And that's what the marina and the boat storage business is all about.
Right. No one else has any concerns about this except me. I mean, you know what? We have a cabin on Lake Superior. We have access to the lake.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
And
in my district.
In Bayfield County. Darn. And, you know, I mean, people have to pay on the bay we're off of to put their boat in storage that isn't on the lake. They drive it, you know, a mile away or half a mile away, and it sits there all year. And we all pay increased property taxes for public access. And it is open to the public permanently. So I don't know why the people who are running these businesses need a property tax break. I'm not understanding it. So I don't know what lake you got this going on, but I don't know. I mean, it just seems like if the trade-off is somehow this is going to keep public access, then we sure better get public access in a permanent covenant.
The point of the public access is so that private marinas with exclusive memberships can't get this classification. That's the point of putting the public access in. Make sure that a private yacht club can't get this.
Maybe Representative Marquardt and Senator Skoy can work on language that gets us permanent public access, because I don't think this does. Well, there's no way to claw back the tax breaks people have been getting if we start this program. See, now you know that, you know, I go to a cabin, too. I've been keeping that from you for years for a reason.
How many years has it been in the family?
25. And, you know, we're not so cheap that we think our parents, that we shouldn't have to help pay for it if our parents can't. I have to tell you, I think this whole cabin debate that we have all the time around here, I get really frustrated with all the kids who think they have a right to their parents' cabins without paying all the costs. Where did all these cheap kids, who raised them? What a bunch of cheapskates. They want to freeload off their parents their whole life, even when it's time to get the cabin. They still want the taxes deferred, even though their parents have been bringing in the wood and taking care of the driveway and plowing the snow and paying the taxes and paying the utilities. And here comes all the kids, a bunch of cheapskates.
Madam Chair, the Senate didn't bring cabin deferral to this table.
No, that's paid for. No, we just have this whole psychology that you have a right to a cabin for the rest of your life, you're entitled, and you don't have to pay for it. I mean, come on. It's a discretionary purchase. I'm part of it, too. But I don't buy into this we're entitled to it thing. Pay for it. Like any other discretionary purchase. There's carrying costs. But different issue. I guess I don't understand this marina concept enough to feel comfortable with it.
Well, I do think it's a public access issue, but maybe we can solidify this to assure that it continues to be a public access issue. So as the chair has mentioned here, maybe there's some wording we can put in here that would say you've got to make this commitment if you're going to do that.
Thinking about a clawback provision, or let's not make this
something
overly complicated.
Right.
I thought you guys had this part worked out.
A couple hours ago we did.
Only money.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Whose bill idea was this? Was this somebody who owned a marina and just had a bill? Or really a...
I'm sure it was my bill.
It was your bill?
Oh.
Sorry. Well, you haven't liked any of my bills either.
Okay, well, maybe you guys can do a little more work on that. And
we'll work
some more. We've got lots of things to rework
on. You must have not met very long today.
Well, it was kind of hard to get a hold of Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, I think Senator Scoy, the next area is...
Can't believe we didn't get that little thing done.
Maybe page 43, Article 6, Section 22.
Just skip right over our mandate mitigation section.
Which one was this?
Well, we'll go to yours. We can come back.
Which one was that?
That was section that property tax installments, but we'll come back to it. Section 28 of Article 4.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I think...
Yeah, the Senate's got a pretty good idea there.
I would even move that. I am just to get things back on track. If Senator Scoy doesn't, I'm going to move the Senate language, Article 4, Section 28.
Section 28.
On page 42.
Do we need to vet this any, or?
No, I this.
Well, we should probably move it before somebody decides there's a problem.
Oh, this is a good one, and it just raises from $50 to $250 where they have to break it up into one or two, and they'd just be able to keep it into one.
This is mandate relief. Mandate relief.
This is going to reduce local government costs.
Don't you need to do that too? Eventually? Yeah, that's a good one.
Let's do this, but then we can't because we've got our counties in here.
On the Marquardt motion, Senate Article 4, Section 28. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Wow.
Okay. Then, and on page 43, Article 6, Section 22, what I would offer here is to remove the change. This is the senior deferral program. Remove the change on the income from $60,000 to $75,000. Eliminate that. But just go with the age, which means if not both seniors would have to be 65. So if you had one senior was 65 and the other spouse was 62, you would qualify. The other spouse could be a few years younger and you wouldn't have to wait for both spouses to hit 65. That is on page 43, Article 6, Section 22.
Mr. Chair.
Who wants to get in on this? Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask, does this bump this from 144 users to 150?
There you go.
Mr. Chair, I'm not even going to answer that. We're assuming this could, I just think it's going to increase this program 10 to 20%. In the future. That is huge.
At least 28 people. How about if we don't get to 150 by 2012, we have an automatic repeal. What do you think?
That sounds good. We'll just go ring some doorbells.
Let's give this a chance, and we'll just see if it makes a difference.
144, right? And the department said we got 144 people. Well, is that right?
Last year,
died. Somebody died.
Oh, this is so sad. And we want to extend it to cabins.
Well, Mr. Chair, if we could just take a small step this year in trying to increase the participation rate.
What year did we put this in law? What year did we put this in law? Does anybody know? This was a, I remember I was in the House. This was a Thomasoni bill.
Oh, let's repeal it.
Thomasoni had this.
Should we repeal it?
Yeah, let's.
Will we save any money?
Does it cost more to administer to these people?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, if we don't make the change, we'll never know if we can make a difference in this program. Let's take that first step and start moving.
It's unbelievable.
Take the 2012 numbers to go with.
What do you think? Should we roll the dice here and see if we can get that program to 150 people?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the most important thing is to show the House how to accept the provision of the other side. So I'd be willing to move this if you're interested.
Are you going to get anything for it, or are you just going to give it to them?
I'm just going to give it to them.
We've done a couple.
Maybe we should add the 2012.
We couldn't get our little apprenticeship thing that we thought was all worked out. We couldn't get our marina thing that we thought was all figured out.
Hey, you got that other stuff. And you brought in the whole parade.
Couldn't get Representative Loeffler's thing for the Catholic elder care.
Got close on that.
Yeah.
Close.
That's what I love. And you got bovine. I got a picture I drew of 5 acres per cow.
That was huge.
Right there.
That was huge provisions. We gave
and the riparian, we compromised on that.
All we're trying to do with the bovine TV thing is keep the department out of court.
Could have sent a whole lot more money up to Leroy, Senator Stump's district, Representative Olin. And
we
Senator
couldn't do his
Stump.
Little school thing. Couldn't do Representative Olin's little school thing.
Employee benefits. And we have a lot of stuff.
Well, Mr.
We
Chair,
were ready to do the rainbow thing.
Would you entertain a motion if I move this on Article 6, House language on Section 22, just that first provision deleting the income level.
So are we moving, is it more than just Section 22?
That's all income related.
No, I think all the rest would be income. So
it's just the first bullet.
First bullet on Section 22, just the age.
Just the first
bullet. Just the age.
Yeah.
Council got that? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. No. Motion prevails.
Hey, you guys defeated this right here.
Okay, let's make a run at Senate Article 4, Section 30. But council has to tell me.
10:30.
What we're doing there. Airport zoning council. What are we doing?
Oh, what's that?
Mr. Chair,
is that a tax?
To the airport authority law that was adopted last year, and that law has referred to a number of municipal airport powers, and this extends this to give the airport authority the same powers that municipal airport authorities have. With regard to zoning around here.
So, Madam Chair, what we did last year was we allowed a Joint Powers Board airport authority to have taxing authority. This would give them zoning authority around the airport also, in addition to the taxing.
Mr. Chair, it's not a tax bill. No taxes in there. That's a local government bill or a transportation bill, isn't it? You have some other things in here that aren't tax bills.
Yeah, it's a Senate provision. I think
Representative Seifert.
It's okay. I just think it's okay.
Oh, I thought Senator Rest had it in a bill she's got in local government.
No, you misunderstood my. Okay. Yeah, I just said I think it's okay.
Okay.
You want to do the airport CI levy on the airports?
In exchange for this?
Well, that's a tax bill. It's in here. Raise the CI.
Do you not want to do Section 30?
Well, it's not a tax bill, is it?
I have a really good local government bill I need to. It's not a tax.
I don't even know who this is for.
I don't do it. You only have tax bills in here, I think. I don't have any other
numbers. Just vote on something and see how it goes. On the SCOI motion to adopt Standard Article 4, Section 30. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
This is going to get harder going forward. Motion prevails.
Division. Oh, come on.
No. All those in favor. I'm sure I heard yeses on that side. It's going to start getting harder.
Yes.
Okay.
You don't have to raise my
hand. What else do we have, Senator Scoy, that you guys been working on?
Well, what do we have? Article, we've got that really tough stuff. I don't know if we want to go there. What's Article 13? Well, in Article 4, there's Section 54, 55, and 57. I got maybe by one of them, and okay by 57. We could try that study.
Well, I had
what page are you on?
Do you have another one?
This is now on page 48. We're not going to do anything with 54.
Mr. Chairman?
They're arrested.
Can I do a suggestion on the fiscal disparities portion?
Where is it at?
It's in the Senate. It was started on 46 and 47.
46.
And then it was in 59. And I would like to recommend that the House language with the addition of including in the study the effect of market rate levies. I had worked with, and Mr. Hines has some better language, with Mr. Hines and Mr. Paulson and Ms. Baker in trying to once again get rid of the distortions in the fiscal disparities program, something that apparently I've been working on for since actually 1986, I believe, when I first started suggesting that we needed to reform the fiscal disparities program. It was when Representative Ostoff was chair of the Metropolitan Affairs Committee, and there was a subcommittee on this issue. And I had this bill, and I was a second termer, and I thought I was really smart. And it reformed the whole thing, and the bill passed the subcommittee, and I anticipated at any moment that the bill would be heard in the full committee. But somewhere along the way, the subcommittee report got lost. And I would ask Representative Ostroff, when are we going to hear that bill? And he said, well, I can't find the subcommittee report. And, of course, that was a time when winners and losers were even more dramatic than they are now. And St. Paul, under my reform bill, was a huge loser. And so the subcommittee report stayed lost forever. But that didn't stop me, and I had the bill once again in 1997, House File Number 339, the title of which was Eliminating the One-Year Lag in Determining Fiscal Disparities. It didn't succeed then either. However, tried it again this time, but there's even some more complexities in what we were proposing here, and I think the House approach is better, and I like it also because there's the report is due 1 year earlier. But with regard to the market rate levies, which was the complicating factor that would make what I was proposing in the Senate proposals in 46, 47, and 59 not work, or not, I guess they could work, but too risky. And Mr. Hines, maybe you could suggest how bringing in the market rate levies would fit in that proposal.
So, Senator Ress, you started this in 1986.
Yeah.
And in 2009, you're going to get a study.
I don't think I've ever made it into a tax bill before, though.
Sure. You should move that next.
87, I guess I started.
So, Senator.
But Mr. Hines maybe could help with that
language.
And that would just be an additional sentence to House Section Article 6, Section 37, if someone would make that motion.
Ms. Goy moves House Article 6, Section 37, as amended by Mr. Hines, incorporating oral amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Markward.
I think on page 48 on Senate Article 4, Section 57.
I thought you were going to say 55.
No, Section 57.
Or studies.
That is, on mine it's page 48.
Horses.
I would move that study.
Did the ag bill not have anything on this subject? Is that all wrapped up?
Mr. Chair, I don't think the ag bill is quite wrapped up, but they don't have anything with regard to horses. And I don't think this issue is going to go away. And, you know, if we can get some information from the department next year to help us as we decide this, I think it would be helpful and try to narrow in on where there are problems. And there's a lot of stuff that here that probably we don't have to deal with, and hopefully the department can help narrow this down.
The House not hear about horses?
We should just say no for everything, forever.
Well, there are going to be bills introduced on this subject, I think, so we might as well have the department do some work on it. On the Markwart motion to adopt Senate Article 4, Section 57. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
To Article 55? No.
I don't think we're ready.
Well, how about the certificate of indebtedness stuff? Can we do that?
Yeah. We both did that, didn't we?
We both did that.
Yeah. We did 58. Champion there?
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
So, Senator Scoy's House Article 6 or Senate Article 4?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have to take the House language here, but maybe we should ask either Mr. Michaels or Ms. Zoff what their opinion are of the differences.
Page 47, the emergency debt certificates, the difference between the House and the Senate. Top of page 47 on the slide.
I think the difference is that the Senate eliminates the reference to or eliminates levy limits, and the House retains a reference to the coordination with levy limits for the levies to pay these debt certificates. Other than that, I don't know what the differences are.
keeps the levy limit for stuff. We probably need the House language.
I think there is one other provision where the Senate authorizes the issuance of the certificates without a referendum, and I don't believe the House does.
Ooh.
Deal?
You don't want a referendum.
We don't want a referendum.
No.
Mr. Michael?
No, we don't have a referendum on it.
So the tax bill has a referendum in it?
No.
It's
in the public finance bill. Quite frankly, that provision will not work if you don't have a referendum exemption because of the time issue.
That's the only problem. Right. So the levy limit is the only problem.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe staff, the fact that we have a one-year levy limit for counties in our bill, does that, I mean, how does that impact the levy limit area? That's the...
Why'd you do that?
Mr. Chair, that's so if they impose that half-cent sales tax, it replaces the property tax plus. We figure since they're getting a infusion of new revenue that we would keep the levy limit in place for 1 year.
I don't think we should assume they're going to get that local sales tax. So we shouldn't make this decision based on that.
You're saying we can just take the Senate language?
Mr. Chair, I mean, we can, you know, whatever winds up in the bill, I suppose you can go back and change another section, but that would be the concern is we still have the one-year levy limit for counties.
So if we adopt the House language, we'll have a one-year levy limit for counties? Mm-hmm. Or it contemplates that?
Mr. Chairman, what the House provision does is that if there's a special levy for, currently it's for aids that were unallotted, and the House bill also adds a special levy for aids that are legislatively reduced mid-year, and all this say that if you issue these emergency debt certificates, because they're debt, they qualify for a special levy, that you can't take both special levies essentially for the same aid cut. And so I think if you do the House levies, it doesn't, you know, whether or not you have levy limits really doesn't make any difference. But if you do have them, it sort of prevents this double claiming of that same aid cut as two different special levies.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Michaels, how many years are these certificates for?
Two
years?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, they can be up to 2 years.
Thank you.
Senator Scoy moves House Article 6. This is in the public finance bill?
Of the House.
So are we doing some public finance stuff now? You didn't want to do that the other day.
Well, we haven't passed off the stay off the floor.
So this is in Article 13, Section 13 of the Public Finance article?
Yeah, I think you want to do the House, but make clear that you didn't intend to referendum. There's no referendum.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Chair, and that would clarify that there's no referendum included in this provision.
So the Marquardt motion is to adopt Senate Article 4, Section 48, and House Article 13, Section 13. Is that right? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Yeah, I don't know what this is. Revan giving us our amendment here. You want to do this?
Section 50, Red River Water.
Adopted.
Adopted.
Did we do that?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moore.
Do we do anything with Article 4, Section 58 of the Senate language?
No.
Talked about it for a long time.
No, we haven't.
Talked about Senator Torres Ray.
We talked that length.
Senator Hill, and yes, Representative Champion. Senator Dibble.
Is this, Mr. Chair,
Senator,
would this be a fortuitous time to move Section 58?
Divided. I want to just try taking the vote.
Should we just vote on it and see how it goes? And if it fails, it gets left behind?
Well, I was just, since we're all gauging what opportune moments there were, I just.
What do you think? Mr. Chair.
I can vote.
Is this what Champion was trying to do?
Yeah. This is Champion.
So,
looks familiar.
Flexible for locals.
Permissible, right?
No.
Permissible.
We can't do it now.
I like Emmer's thing where it says they must abate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it
is. Oh.
It's flexible. Allows local small.
We had a hard time getting around to this.
I'm fine with it. Go ahead. We can wrap up the bill and have it on the desk in the morning.
Can we put a little sunset on this so we don't put it in law forever? Or what do we,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Markway.
The provision is a bit open-ended. I mean, it's talking about access being impeded. Doesn't say how much. It doesn't also say how much of a loss of a revenue. I mean, a business could lose $10 and potentially, I guess it's up to the city if they want to do the exception. But it's definitely, I mean, it's that was my concern initially when Representative Champion brought that to me on the House floor that day. And is it? I mean, I don't know if we know what the potential impact of this could be, but it does leave it up to each city. So
wouldn't it be a good idea if we had a sunset on it so that 5 years from now we could come back and at least see how it was used?
That's a good idea.
That might not.
Or 3 years or something, so we have to revisit this issue and see what.
If everybody's using it all the time, based on nothing, or if it's already.
Maybe we'll find out that 140 people are using it.
Yeah, and then we keep it, and we get rid of the sunset.
Senator Dibble suggested we give it a 3-year sunset.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Section 58 with a 5-year sunset.
Everybody understand the motion? 5 years, so the date is what? You have a date in mind, Sarah Ma? June 30th? 2014? Or?
Fine.
June 30th, 2014.
My birthday. My birthday.
Oh, for taxes payable.
Oh, yeah. So December 30th.
So they do the math.
In 14,
13.
They're sunsetting it.
Okay. For taxes payable through 2014, and then it expires. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. We're going to get Senator Torres's rate. We're going to get a vote for anything on this tax bill now.
Really?
Got on the list, Mr. Chair, unless you want to go back to the nonprofit stuff.
Well, we don't have enough time.
People
I tried that earlier. Hang on.
Why don't you want to do the rainbow thing tonight?
Think about it, yeah.
It's only the...
Fiscal disparities.
Representative Seifert knows something good to do that we can all agree on.
Yeah, I'm ready to sign off.
Did you find anything in there yet?
Blue Seaway Port Authority?
Representative Reinert wants to talk to us.
Do we?
Is he here?
Oh, he was.
Is he sitting on
the... Oh, good idea.
34 and 35.
74?
34 and 35. Where's that?
Madam Chair, page. My staff reminded me.
Article 4, 34 and 35. I don't even know what it does.
Would you mind to talk to him for like a minute?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, but I...
Madam Chair, we have, I know it's looking through the minerals article, we have one provision that's the same, so let's get it out of the way so that we have, and I'll take the House language.
Is it something that everything else is riding on?
No.
Because I made a promise to Representative Rucavina.
It's the one thing we probably agree on that would give us a minerals article.
Where is it?
It's on page 74. Page 74, it's House Article 12, Section 5. And the only difference we have is the House language allows the loan proceeds to be used for something other than construction costs. And I think we agree on that, that it should be used, that it could be used for other project costs. Other than that, I guess we're the same.
So you're moving the House position?
Moving House Article 12, Section 5.
There's an amendment to that 34, 35.
All in favor signify by saying aye. Contrary, no. Motion prevails. House Article 12, Section 5. Now we have a minerals article.
Well, but you got all this other stuff.
The other stuff's going to be harder. We haven't sat down and talked about all their stuff.
Do you want to talk about taxing airports?
Say, Tom.
We got a provision on, Mr. Chair, we got a provision on page 43, section 34 and 35 that Senator Marty's been working on, and he has reached some agreements and has an amendment he'd like to offer. And maybe Ms. Loft can explain what's going on here, but I think we've got kind of a consensus agreement here.
This housing improvements.
Does the House have this someplace? There was a bill on this.
Yeah, no, we don't. But it looks like, if we're reading this right, it's making these more restrictive with more disclosure, which would be a positive thing. But is that what it's, maybe it's, staff could explain.
Senator Marty had introduced an amendment when the bill was being heard in committee, and he was intending to have more disclosure with respect to when a housing improvement district was being initiated, looking for more disclosure and also requiring that if a fee is imposed on a basis other than the tax capacity or square footage, the city council would have to make a finding that the alternative basis was more equitable. The language in the original Marty amendment had said that the alternative basis for the fee is a more equitable basis, and he had also included a provision that said that fees that are imposed for these housing improvement districts had to meet the same standard for benefit to the property as a special assessment, and also had to go through the same special assessment appeal process. This amendment with respect to that section, this amendment would modify that so that council would have to make a finding that the alternative basis for the fee is more fair and reasonable rather than having a more equitable basis, and instruct the requirement that the fees would have to have the same standard of benefit as assessments to be subject to the same appeal processes. There's also a change in the exception for the prerequisites for establishing a housing
Go off at 5 to 12, the room gets just quiet.
The original language in the Senate bill says that the governing body would have to ensure that all contracts for housing improvement projects are subject to public contracting law. Instead, the amendment would say the governing body would have to determine whether the association or the implementing entity will contract for the housing improvements, and if they do, that those would be subject to contracting law. And I think the city supports
this already on that. Is this okay with the league?
There's an amendment that gets made.
Are they asleep?
Okay, what's.
So you had it.
The amendment is to the Senate language, right?
Yes.
So we adopt the Senate language with the amendment?
Yes.
Lovely.
So Senator Skoy moves Senate Article 4, Section 34 and 35, and incorporates the A41 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Well, Mr. Chair, Revenue handed out an amendment that I think we should ask them to address. It's an A1. We can get this passed out.
Does Kadoon know what it is? Department of Revenue?
Department of Revenue.
Department of Revenue has an amendment? I like we do. Thank you. Oh my gosh. This is way too much.
Okay, what are we doing? Mr. Hogan, you know what we're doing here?
Mr. Chair, I did a few hours ago. I'm trying to recall.
Adding the money.
On this provision.
Mr. Chair, the first portion of the amendment to delete the $1,110,000 and insert $1,140,000 is the 2000 assessment year 2010 tier break for the first tier of agricultural value. The $1,110,000 was a guess from earlier in the session based on we were awaiting data to do a better calculation, and we've taken a look at more data that we've received, and we believe that the revenue neutral number is actually
$1,140,000.
First year limit for ag homestead property.
That's in law. That's inflated in law.
Yeah.
Well, we should get rid of that. Where else is that happening right now? We're moving that everywhere.
But we already adopted the 1.1 million. This is the department article. Did we already do this? Oh, did we?
Just getting inflation. Pretty much we're moving indexing everywhere.
So, Council, does this just bring the number up to what the current number would be after it's adjusted for inflation? That's what it does. So this actually is the current number.
It's the number that will
Mr. Chair, the reason for this proposal is because of the new Class 2A and 2B that was created last year. The statute that told us how to index the first tier of agricultural value was based on an outdated definition. The old definition no longer exists. So the Department of Revenue technical bill, our technical policy bill, had a provision in it to change the way the first tier of ag value would be indexed, but because there's no way to perfectly identify the assessment year 2010 methodology, we're basically just plugging the number for assessment year 2010 based on what we think it is, based on the best data that we have, and then going forward, instead of indexing it back to the base year of 2004, I believe, it'll instead be indexed on a rolling basis of comparing the previous year to the second previous year. So we had to change the methodology because of the creation of 2A and 2B, and the easiest way to do that was just to plug a number for assessment year 2010 and then change the methodology for the indexing going forward.
Acres is going to haunt us for the rest of our lives. That's a Green Acres, right?
Well, what you guys brought.
Okay, Mr. Nerd, what does the bottom part do?
Mr. Chair, we had initially, in our as Mr. part Hager. Of our policy technical bill, sought a correction that would allow us to value the 2B non-productive lands. It was a minor fix based on the old language. With the passage of the new Green Acres Law a month or so ago, we decided to adopt the same method of valuation for the rural preserved lands and apply that to 2B lands, so the assessors only have one basis for calculating that value. So it's merely making it consistent with the language in the rural preserve program.
This is fun. What do you
think? Well, the bottom part makes sense, and the top part is current law.
Look at that.
So where does this, I guess, Council, can we just adopt the amendment without any amendment?
Mr. Chairman, these are amendments we have set aside, and we went through the Department of Property Tax article the other day. We set aside these first two sections because there were still some questions that we saw.
On the SCOI motion to adopt the A1. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, no. Motion prevails. Members, have you had enough? Love to stay, but the rules don't allow us.
This one's ready to do a point of order.
And Representative Seifert, the council brought me the rule, and the rule just says that the gavel shall change every calendar day. It doesn't say what time during the calendar day. So the rule's a little vague. Well, it doesn't say what time. It says the gavel shall change at least once every calendar day. So, I mean, my reading of the rule, it doesn't.
So I can actually throw this away now.
We've got a little more work to do in the rules yet.
I can actually throw this away now.
Tomorrow, Madam Chair?
Thank you. Tomorrow. After the floor, I guess.
After the floor. Yeah, deal what we're going to.
9:30, we start. We've got, I think, economic development, which may or may not have a veto threat issued on it, so I end up moving it on.
Do you know what the status of that is?
There's some issues with the River Center bailout. It might get sent back to conference, or we'll find out. Governor's in Washington right now, so we're going to find out what the deal is. If it's going to get vetoed, I'd suggest we send it back to conference and fix it rather than go through the machinations of a veto. Doesn't sound real good.
Apparently, Commissioner McElroy, this what I heard, was didn't know if that provision would draw a veto or not.
He didn't sound real wild about it when I met with him at 4 o'clock. So it didn't sound like the Senate had a real big vote on it either, passed by 4 votes, so. So that might take a while to get through that bill, otherwise we just get a bunch of little bills, and then their ag and vets would be done if we can get the jurisdiction over the veterans homes figured out. from Senator Berglund. You know, she doesn't have enough billions to spend, so we've got to argue about a couple million for the vets' home. So that one's
sitting there. 4 million.
I would say we're going to be in session for a good few hours.
And the Senate's going in at noon?
Noon.
And they we'll probably be wrapping up about noon.
They anticipated we'd be out by 2 or 3, I think is what they said. So mid-afternoon.
We'll wait for you.
Any idea what we want to work on? Seems like we're about out of ideas.
Ages of stuff in here.
Wrap up the bill.
They haven't had much luck yet.
Maybe Representative Seifert tomorrow will tell us which tax increases he thinks the governor will sign. And we can put those in.
That'll take about 5 seconds. So we'll wrap the bill up. And
I'm sure I have a little commitment over the dinner hour tomorrow, so I'll have to be absent for a period
of time.
We'll
have to go to dinner.
Is dinner at noon or at 6 in your part of the world?
Dinner is supper
in my part of the world.
That's an answer.
Lunch is lunch. Nobody carries a dinner bucket. People carry a lunch bucket. Got a cabin. Do you have a lunch bucket, too? We'll pick it up tomorrow. Committee's adjourned.